This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome to The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin on Zoomer Radio. Yeah, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
I'm dry. How are you?
Yeah, dry. We're dry too.
I know. So I looked it up. Prince Edward County is not officially in a drought, but it is considered abnormally dry.
Oh, well, we got a notice. We have a fire permit because we have a fire pit on our property. Mm-hmm. And we got the notice came through this past week that we're on a no burn. They're saying, no, don't do it because
burn
it's too
ban.
Yeah. Burn ban.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Where I live, you buy a burn ban. Or sorry, you buy a burn permit, and then if you're going to have a fire, you phone to say, I'm going to light a fire, because it's all volunteer firefighters here. So if there's smoke seen and nobody expected smoke in that area, they call out the volunteers. But if you've called and said, I'm going to have a fire, then there's no worries if people see some smoke. I haven't even tried to call, but I'm sure we've been under a burn ban for weeks and weeks. There's just no way. It's so, so tinder dry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't have to call. We buy the permit annually. Is, you know, it's a January, you know, second after when they open, you can go in and get it, and it's good for the calendar year. And then we can have a fire. We don't have to call ahead, but we have to have that on hand. But yeah, my wife Gail showed me this past week. She said, look at this. And we don't recall in the last few years having that burn ban where they have said, even if you have a permit, you're not allowed to do this.
So you're dry too. And did they actually mail that to you? Or was it like an
email? No, it was an email. It was an email notice. Yeah.
That's cool though. That's good. So, communication is key, right?
Indeed. See, speaking of communication, I'm going to give out the numbers. Okay. We would love for you to give us a call. If you live in Toronto, here's how you communicate. 416-360-0740. If you live outside Toronto, but still within Ontario, this is a toll-free number that you want to use. 1-866-740-4740. And our regular operator, Owen, is off today for a family event. And so we have Anthony here, Anthony Stathoukos. And so glad to have Anthony. Anthony is my operator on Big Band Sunday Night every week. So we work together regularly. But he is here.
He's a pretty talented guy.
He is very talented and exceedingly nice. And and I don't know that this might not be on your radar, but he actually just took a trip and he would be somebody that you might want to talk to at some point because he visited his friends in Switzerland and went hiking in the Alps for a week. Yeah. So he came back sore, but with some beautiful pictures, of course, about things that you wouldn't, vegetation and that you wouldn't necessarily see here.
Singing like Edelweiss and things like that, right?
There you go. Edelweiss. You got now the song's going to be in my head all day.
All right. Anthony, we want to hear a rendition of Edelweiss. You must have sung it while you were up there. I would have.
And here's some chimes to go along with your Edelweiss, which... Of course, let Anthony know if you're a first-time caller, and I will give you the garden wings. Please call often, call early, and one question per call, please. Have you got any announcements today, Charlie?
No, it's summer. The hort societies are all at the beach, I think, or out fishing, or you know, doing like me, hauling hoses around, trying to keep things alive. I will say the vegetables are smaller this year. I'm not going to have the big bountiful harvest like I did last year. Like the plants are smaller. Clearly the harvest is going to be smaller. I've got lots of green tomatoes. Peppers are coming on nicely though. And I have several pepper plants. So I've got several peppers. We've been eating eggplant, lots of eggplant coming on. But yeah, that's been my world. There's a lot of hose dragging. I would like to remind everybody, and I'll say it now, I'll say it again. we are done with fertilizing. There's no more fertilizer with the exception of your annual plants, your vegetables. You know, you can obviously fertilize your tomatoes and that sort of thing. Your flowers, your annual flowers, the hanging baskets that are looking a little tired right now, they could use fertilizer, but do not apply any fertilizer to your shrubs, your trees, your perennials, even your lawn does not want fertilizer now. But we will think about fertilizing in the fall when it comes to our lawn. So that'd be more October, November. So for now, any of our perennial plants, so the plants we expect to have in our gardens next year are cut off from any fertilizer, any synthetic, you know, blue stuff or pink stuff or purple stuff.
Okay. two things come to mind. Zucchini. We've been getting zucchini. Mm. They've been doing well, I guess. Our neighbor two doors over has been giving us and sheepishly says, do you want another zucchini?
Are they like a foot long? Or
yeah,
are they,
yeah, they're pretty big. Oof. So I guess a good year for that.
Again, it comes down to water. And so, I mean, it's been a really good year in terms of the heat because many of these plants love heat. So lots of sun, lots of heat, no problem there. If it's just a question of irrigation, have you been able to irrigate? When I look around, it's very agricultural where I live, of course, and it's either corn or soybeans, which is grown extensively in the county where there's growing, you know, where there's actual agriculture taking place. Well, the corn is probably not even as high as my waist in most situations. It's tiny. And the soybeans are also very small. They're down, you know, they should be sort of knee high, but they're not. They're maybe
disappointing.
Only a few inches high. So it'll be a small harvest for the farmers as well.
Okie dokie. You know, we've got callers on the line, so why don't we go to our first? We have Jean calling from Newmarket. Welcome to the Garden Show, Jean.
Good morning to both of you. Charlie, this is a shout out to you. You are incredible. I don't like orchids. I was given an expensive one for Easter, and I kind of swallowed it. Oh, no. The darn thing, according to you, with what to do, it now has this stem shooting out about a foot, and there's eight new bulb little shoots off.
That's nice.
Thank you. Thank you. And that's all. Goodbye.
Thanks, Jean.
Jean.
One little tip I will say, obviously Jean's got to figure it out. She's got her orchid in the right spot in her house, right? That bright indirect light. So a north window, east window. But if you like, she's got a really tall flower stem. Make sure you stake it if you can. You know, the orchids usually come with those little metal stakes and little clips. So as one flower stem dies, don't throw away that stake. Keep it for the next one and insert it and clip your flower stem. I just find that the flowers are so heavy that the whole thing will just be kind of lying on the table. So if we can hold up that flower stem, it's much perkier, looks much prettier.
Okay, yeah. And I was just going to say, what a great way to start off the show.
Yeah, yeah. Jean's great. I love good stories. Yes, tips, tricks, techniques, good stuff. Let's hear it from you.
Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Margaret on the line from Cambridge. Welcome to the Garden Show, Margaret.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Morning.
Hello.
Hello, morning.
What do you got there, Margaret? Morning. What's your question?
Okay, I have issues with my boxwood. Mm-hmm. It seems as if they're dying, and they've been watered, and I don't know what this, if I have to get rid of them or if they have come back.
Well, what you probably have is, and you might not have ever seen it before because it's a fairly new invasive insect called a boxwood tree moth. Tiny, tiny little caterpillars eating away all the leaves of your boxwood very quickly, almost overnight, and leaving behind webbing and leaving behind their poop, also known as frass. So just making the shrub, the boxwoods look horrible and sad and you know, 90% dead. There is a spray. The spray needs to be applied while there's still leaves on the plant. Once there's no leaves, the plants are probably toast, particularly at this time of year. And so you may need to replace, and then it just becomes a question of what to replace with. I would not recommend replacing boxwood with boxwood.
Oh, okay. There's still some leaves on it, but there's also a berry on it that looks like a blueberry.
Oh,
and I've never seen that before. But
no
the
kidding.
Leaves are dying, but it's, so, the plant is not completely dead.
And you're sure it's a boxwood? like big
yes.
box.
Yeah, yeah, I bought not them as else. Boxwood. Yeah, I've got three of them.
So. I'm surprised. The berries have me a little puzzled because boxwoods don't produce flowers or berries that I can think of. But either way, if you can get to your local garden center or home store, pick up something called B as in Bob, T as in Tom, K as in kite. So BTK. It's a liquid. You'll follow the instructions, mixing the liquid with water, and you'll even apply it today if you can. You will apply it early in the day or late in the day, not during a hot, you know, mid-afternoon situation, because we don't want to, it's very stressful when plants are sprayed with anything. So we want to avoid adding stress to stress, and hot afternoon sun is stressful. So, I mean, the boxwood tree moth are not going to go away. So if you do buy the BTK, you may want to look up, there's lots and lots on the web as well on the subject of boxwood tree moth. And you're going to find this is going to be a multi-spray every season, because it's an insect that breeds very quickly and has 2 to 3 generations every summer, like every season.
Thank you very much for the call there, Margaret, and good luck. We're just going to go to break in a moment, but I want to give you the numbers first. Please give us a call. There's lots of room on the lines. 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. Don't be shy. Give us a call. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, it is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, and of course, it's the first weekend of August. Here we are. Yeah, I know. Crazy. Like, and so in a lot of people's minds, summer is half over, which it is not quite, because, of course, we go deep into September, you know, so we're not quite. Mm. I think we have to get to the another week in before we get to technically the halfway point. But it always feels like we're at halfway through when we get to August. I think you would agree.
I think so. Yeah, it does. You start feeling the summer winding down, and you start feeling like you got to grab the moments too. It's like, we haven't done that barbecue we were thinking about, or we've been spending a bit of time at the beach because it's just been so hot here. And I guess in Quebec, they do this thing where everybody goes on holidays at the same time. So I think, or in particular industry, so the construction trade, as an example, they all shut down for two weeks together, which I guess is efficient from a working perspective. Anyway, there's tons of Quebecois in the county as we speak, and lots of Quebec license plates and French speaking people, because you think to yourself, why would anybody from Quebec come to Ontario for like summer? They've got beautiful summers there. There are no beaches in Quebec. No beaches. Lots of rocks, lots of trees, lots of water.
But no beaches.
So, of course, we're only, 3.5 hours from Montreal. Don't say this out loud to anybody else. And, jump in your car and come into the county is something that becomes a bit of a thing. People do quite often.
Well, the county is beautiful. There are lots of places. I mean, there are lots of beautiful places everywhere in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I think that as human beings, we also like to go somewhere that is different than where we reside. Even if even if somebody who lives in Collingwood, I mean, you get used to it. And so you want to go somewhere else. So, we want to go to the county, and people from the county want to go to Collingwood.
Collingwood, exactly.
We like to trade, there should be a lot of house trading is what should happen.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, topographically, we're very different, right? You've got some hills called mountains for some reason, but anyway, we have nothing. We're flat. So we both have water. Again, you have lots of rocks. You have a bit of beachy stuff up there on Georgian Bay.
But you have sandbanks down where
we have kilometers and kilometers of beach here. It's beautiful.
Nice. Okay, those numbers again: 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. We have Judy on the line from Oakville. Welcome to The Garden Show, Judy.
Hi, good morning, Charlie and Dean. How are you?
Morning.
Yeah, fabulous.
Great.
I have a trick to share with you that I think is deterring the Japanese beetles. And
sweet.
I also have the name of two roses that they have not attacked.
Oh, excellent.
Yes. So do you want the roses first?
Sure.
Karl Lagerfeld. which is sort of a silvery, mauvey, pinky one, and Chrysler Imperial. Now, this is a new
that's
one.
That's an old one.
I know. No, it's an old, old, beautiful
fragrance.
It's a
really
fragrance,
old one, yeah.
But I bought a new one, and the Japanese Beatles aren't at all interested.
Oh, good to know. Good to know. I'm writing this all down. Karl Lagerfeld and Chrysler are not being chewed by the Japanese Beatles.
I know. And I think it's because it's a newer rose. It's not, you know, one that I've had for 50 years.
But you know what? Genetically, it should be absolutely identical to a Chrysler that you planted 50 years ago. Like, it should be the exact same plant. Now, it might be on a different rootstock, maybe, but anyway.
But it's a gorgeous, beautiful dark red and that wonderful fragrance. Anyhow, what I've been doing for the Japanese beetles who are attacking the climbing hydrangea is I put a couple of bulbs of garlic in a little mesh bag and smash them to smithereens with a hammer, and then I've hung that about three-quarters of the way up because the beetles, of course, are on the top.
Yep.
So I've hung this little ring of these garlic. They look kind of silly, but the Japanese beetles have not come down. So the question I wanted to ask is, I think I heard you say last year that after they've bred, then the females drop to the ground and lay their eggs. Is that correct?
Yes.
Do they fly anywhere or do they just drop from where they were?
Well, generally, they take the shortest route down to the ground.
Right.
So not always. You will find grub damage in your lawn, sometimes just right out in the open with nothing, no tall structures anywhere. So you know a female beetle has dropped eggs for whatever reason, has flown to that spot and dropped eggs there. But generally, you know, so more than, you know, 50% of the time, the beetles will drop from the tree where they're eating or the eaves trough where they're copulating, and they'll just go straight down and drop eggs literally right below that tall structure. So that's always the first place. When you start seeing yellowing in what was a green lawn or damage that doesn't, you know, sort of make sense, and you will see this. Everything's a bit slow because it's so dry this year, but then again, the heat has sped up some things as well. We do need to, in the next 2 weeks, assuming all of us get some rain, we do have to be on top of watching for the tiny, tiny, newly hatched grub damage. And that first place we start looking is around those tall structures.
Okay. So what I was thinking is, if this garlic is really deterring them, should I put some of these little garlic pouches on the ground under the plant? It's not in lawn, it's in garden.
Maybe. Like, we do know that garlic is an excellent deterrent for many insects. Excuse me. I actually planted garlic chives, which I kind of regret now because they're taking over, but I planted garlic chives around my roses to protect them from aphids. Now, the chives have worked really well as a they're just starting to flower now, and they're really lovely little plants for pollinators, but it has not deterred the Japanese beetles whatsoever. It has certainly, I have no aphids, I have very few other insects, but I have lots of Japanese beetles in my roses. So it's the smashing of the garlic that's probably making a difference. Should you try and avoid having eggs laid at the base of the hydrangea? Well, they're going to get laid somewhere. Right? The eggs could just get laid in your lawn or at your neighbor's. So sure, if you know, you're worried about, you know, you want to deter in that specific area, you could certainly carry on with the smashing of the garlic wherever you don't want eggs laid.
Okay. And you know, the other thing we know is that Judy does not have any vampires either at her house. So she's covered for Japanese beetles and vampires.
But Judy sounds the same. She's even smellier than my place.
I'm putting me in the mood for a big Caesar salad. Okay. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin talking about this dry. We've had a dry July. Hopefully, August will be a little bit more balanced. And, you know, of course, you were reminding us that, of course, May was a very, very wet and cool month. And, and then, you know, as soon as summer hit, that heat hit literally on the first day of summer. And now the balance has been out again. You know, we had all that rain in May and
it was cold spring. And muddy and yeah. North wind was blowing. Like we couldn't even get out and plant our tomatoes until right. June. And but you never know. See, that's the crazy thing. You have no idea. So there we were, May at my place. We had over 200 millimeters of rain in the month of May. In June, we had 36 millimeters compared to 200.
Yeah, that's huge, huge.
And difference. In the month of July, we had 53 millimeters. So, yeah, I mean, it's been June and July have been very dry here, and May was very wet. But I wish there was some crystal ball, like some way you could figure it out and plan, you know, work around it. But anyway, it's the heat has been lovely. Like, there's a lot of great growth in all our plants. All that great rain and all the lovely warmth made June a bumper growing month. But then my trees proceeded to have to drop some leaves. They couldn't sustain all that foliage with so little rain.
Yeah. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have a crystal ball to tell us what's down the line, but we do have an operator, Anthony, who's telling us who's on the line. And that is Tino. We have Tino, who's a first time caller. Yeah. Welcome to the Garden Show, Tino.
Yes.
Morning. Welcome.
Tino, before you ask your question, I'm going to give you the garden wings. Okay.
Yes.
There you go. Thanks very much for being a first time caller.
Yeah. Welcome.
Yes. Do you want me to give you my question?
Yes, please.
All right. I plant some garlic, and the roots underneath, it's all been eaten, and I have to throw it out, really.
Is the bulb been eaten as well?
The bulb's on the bottom, yeah, but the tops are, sometimes you see little bugs on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering what I can do to get rid of them.
You probably won't be able to do much in terms of this year. What you're going to do is next year is you're not going to grow garlic in the same spot. There are little wormy type things. They're typically known as onion maggots, and they are the little caterpillar or larva are of a fly that turn into a fly eventually, and will the fly and the maggot, both of them will do damage to garlic. They feed on the roots of the underground. The little maggots feed on the roots, and of course then you start seeing wilting and the falling over of the plant. Ultimately, the garlic ends up rotting in the ground because it just can't survive the chewing that's going on underground. So that's what it sounds like you've got going on. So what are you going to do? You are not going to grow garlic or onions in that same spot next year. If you can come up with a whole new spot, that would be good. Also, one of the things that I do is I don't put all my garlic together. I kind of scatter my garlic where there's spots in my garden between other plants. So, of course, we're doing that planting in October, November. So I'm, you know, in between the roses or in between some perennials, I pop garlic bulbs down, you know, a couple of inches or, you know, cloves down under. And the other thing is to remember, you've got to do everything to have the best soil in the world. You will eliminate, like, plants can withstand pests when they're very healthy, and a really healthy soil grows really healthy plants. So they do overwinter. Those maggots will be in the ground where you have them now. They will be there in the future. So just, good. Remember, lots of composted manure, good organic matter. Do everything in your power to increase the quality of the soil throughout your garden, but particularly where you are planting things that are susceptible to these horrible maggots. They do talk about beneficial nematodes potentially as something that could kill the maggots. So it would be the same nematodes we use on the grubs in our lawn. So you could be out buying that in the next couple of weeks in your local store. One of my favorite, I think they're still around, called Natural Insect Control out of St. Catharines, they do online sales of nematodes, beneficial nematodes, who will go underground and parasitize all kinds of nasty little larvae that are under the ground and kill them for us. So
they love those nematodes.
Good to work with. Yeah. Hard to see, but good to work with.
I've become a nematode fan over the years.
Yeah. So just keep all that in mind, Tino, and don't give up for the future. But I think your crop this year might be just pretty much of a bust.
Okie dokie. Again, the numbers to call, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. We've got Trudy on the line from St. Catharines. Welcome to the Garden Show, Trudy.
Good morning. Good morning, Tony and Dean.
Morning.
And I just love your wonderful advice. You're so helpful for me.
Thanks.
My question is, when can I start to plant lettuce? Like, I can look online and get advice there, but I don't know with the warmer summers whether I should start later or not.
So you're talking like leaf lettuce or head lettuce?
Leaf lettuce.
Oh, gosh. You can start planting leaf lettuce. Well, you can pretty much plant it year-round. You just can't keep it alive outside in the winter. So I've been replanting leaf lettuce about every 3 weeks at my place, starting back in May.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, because the leaf lettuces in this heat particularly go to flower. We call that bolting. So the spinach, the lettuces, they all extend tall and get flowers. And the leaves at that point are quite bitter. They're not nice and sweet and fresh. So once lettuce bolts or spinach bolts or some of the herbs, we stop, you know, working with that, pull that out and replant seeds. And they will see leaf lettuce seeds. Some of them will germinate within 4 or 5 days and you'll be eating them within 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks.
Okay. Awesome. Also, I did plant lettuce earlier in the summer and I used a shade cloth for a while and that kind of reduced the bolting. Should I use a shade cloth when I plant the new seeds or not?
Sure. I mean, again, just if we're going to have this kind of heat, why not? That the shade cloth was keeping the lettuce cooler. We can also plant and grow lettuce in areas that's not full sun. It could be a spot where you've got morning sun, but afternoon shade. So cooler, just as you realize with your shade cloth, cooler spots in the garden will prolong the life of things like lettuce. And that's one of the things we love about, you know, you can't grow tomatoes in a spot that's only got 4 hours of sun, but you can definitely grow lettuce.
Okay. Oh, I never thought about that. Great idea. I will try that, Charlie. Thank you.
Good stuff. Thanks for calling.
Thanks very much for the call there, Trudy. Charlie, you mentioned something, and I know we only talk about this once in a while, about rotating crops, rotating where you plant things, that it's not a good idea, or it's a good idea to switch the spots where you plant things because it pulls different nutrients out of the soil.
That and also pests, diseases,
okay.
Right? And you'll see, like if you keep planting tomatoes in the same spot year after year after year, you'll notice that your harvest is dwindling. Okay. It's just, you don't get that same growth. You don't get that same, you know, big happy plant over and over and over in the same spot. You have to move them around. And some plants are heavier feeders than others. Tomatoes are a good example. So and kale is always a nice one to switch up, or beans are a nice one to switch up. And it's not just that you have to change the plant, you have to change the family. So one thing we don't always realize is that eggplant, peppers, and tomatoes are all the same family.
Mm.
So you don't say, oh, I'm going to plant eggplant to change up my tomato location, because that won't do any good at all. You really have to change it entirely. Go to carrots or go to onions or, yeah, like I said, kale or beans or something like that.
When I was about 10, we lived for a couple of years outside of Ancaster in a little town called Carluke. And we were renting a farmhouse out there. And so there was a farmer field next to us. And it seemed to me that one year that we were there, the first summer we moved in, they were planted corn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the next year they planted peas. Would that make sense?
Yeah, maybe that long ago, maybe. Soybeans have become the crop of choice, the alternate crop of choice with corn.
Yeah, this would have been like 1977.
And soybeans were not as widely grown then as they are now. So like canola, right? Canola wasn't widely grown the way it is now, because there's a, you know, world market for it. We have perfect conditions in the prairies for growing canola, and soybeans are hugely popular here.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, very different plants, corn and soybeans. You can't get more opposite. Soybeans are legumes. We know legumes will always actually make the soil better. versus corn, which rapes and pillages the soil, takes so much out, whereas any of the legumes puts nitrogen in. So very different plants and really good for obviously that rotation purpose.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Susan on the line from Burlington, and this seems to be the day of garlic. We're going to talk about garlic again. Welcome to the Garden Show, Susan.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
So have I missed the harvest window for garlic? I did take my scapes off, and now the garlic is all just gone brown, like the part above the ground. Is it time for me to dig it?
Yeah, it is. Maybe even a bit late. But if you have a digging fork, you want to go in, you want to loosen the soil and then get those bulbs up. There is a fine line when you're harvesting garlic. You harvest too early when the plant is still green. The above ground green is very green. Then the garlic hasn't achieved its maximum size. If you wait too long to harvest the garlic and it's completely brown above ground, you'll find that the garlic will have started to shrink. So it will start to, the cloves will actually start to shrink a bit. The skin, the papery tunic, it's called, on the garlic will start to be flaky. And you'll see that the bulbs will be, the cloves will be a bit loose as opposed to being tightly attached to the stem. Mm. So yeah, get out there today if you can. Get it all up out of the ground. Get it hung. Remember, we hang our garlic. If you can't hang it because it's all brown, lay it out on old screen or something with ventilation. You need to get it not out in the sun, but you do need it out in the air. So good air circulation, good for a couple of weeks. We want to dry, like cure the garlic. And by curing it, it will last much better throughout the winter.
Okay. I was going to say on behalf of, Susan and I, the novice garlic growers, how you spot that perfect time to dig it up, or do you, you said if it's before it's all brown?
Mm-hmm. Usually I wait till about two thirds of the foliage is yellow. So there's still some green, but it's not fully yellow. And if in doubt, just dig up one.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Like, and if the one is like perfect, then dig up the rest. If the one is like, I bet this could have gotten a little bigger, then wait a couple more days. And of course, if we were having a really rainy season, we would be digging sooner because all that moist earth would contribute to starting rot in the garlic bulbs. Most of us aren't struggling with that. Most of us have very dry soil, so it's not a problem of rottage. And the heat has been great for the growth. Yeah, the garlic is a very easy one. I love it. It's so easy to grow. But then there's the unfortunate, the maggots that sometimes get in. I've had friends where that's happened, and we've changed up the way they grow their garlic and where they grow it and how they grow it, and they've had much better success after that.
Okay. Well, this doesn't happen very often, but it looks like we have two Susans in a row. We have another Susan calling from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Susan.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm calling about one of your favorite trees, the Eastern Redbud. So mine's about 10, maybe 12 feet tall. Mm-hmm. And every year, the branches are absolutely loaded with seed pods. So, of course, now I have all these baby Eastern Redbuds everywhere. Any solutions? For the lower ones, I've been pulling them off, but there's still another 8 feet up that I can't reach.
Wow. So are they growing in your lawn or in your garden?
Both.
So mowing the lawn eliminates them growing. I would think that sort of solves that problem. But in terms of the garden,
it's hard on the back going down and picking all these, picking them all out.
It's like you have to kind of set aside a day to just get down on your hands and knees and pull them.
Yeah.
That's probably what you have to do. There's no easy way to stop those seeds from forming. Once you have all those beautiful flowers in the spring, then you get that beautiful pollination. And before you know it, you've got the beautiful fruit, which of course are the seeds inside the pods. But it reminds me, when I lived in Richmond Hill for many years, we had a Norway maple in our backyard, which over the 25 years of us living there got bigger and bigger. Well, I could have had a Norway maple forest many times over. It's like you're saying, either you go into the business of harvesting and selling what's growing, or you get down on your hands and knees. Now, usually I'd get down on my hands and knees with a bottle of wine handy, and I would just whole Norway maple seedlings. Like, it was a day of pulling thousands of Norway maples.
Yeah, everywhere. And they get in with some of the ground cover, and you don't initially see them until they're, you know, another couple inches high.
But get them. Like, get them as soon as you see them.
I didn't think there'd be a solution, but I always felt Charlie may know something.
Yes, I wish. I mean, I guess but you would never do this. I mean, you could put a gauze. I mean, the tree's getting bigger as well, but you could avoid that pollination when the tree is flowering. You would put like a cloud of cheesecloth kind of gauze over the tree so that the insects wouldn't do the pollinating, so you wouldn't have the seeds, but then again you wouldn't see the flowers. So
and it wouldn't be very pretty. And I'm really of an age that I'm not allowed on the ladder, but I'm so tempted to get the ladder and get up all of those seed pods.
Well, get a broom and knock them off, maybe, you know, gently with a broom.
If they all fall in one place and I can collect them.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Get a basket out. Or lay newspaper or old sheets on the ground and just collect them that way and then just haul it off into the compost.
Yeah.
So. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for the call there, Susan.
Yeah, good luck.
And it's good to know there's no use whining about it. But on the other hand, you can grab a bottle of wine and lay there and pull it out.
You know what? If you're going to do a job like that, like a no-brainer job, you might as well just have some fun, you know?
Yeah. Maybe these days we've been grabbing freezies
popsicles.
Doing that as well. Nice popsicle weather.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yes, indeed. Okay. Well, we are, we're going to take a break, but here are the numbers again, because we do have some room on the line. We have a caller or two, but we have room. Give us a call, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-740. Can be an indoor gardening question, an outdoor gardening question, a fertilizing question, a transplanting question, whatever you've got on your brain. Give us a call. Don't be shy. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here on The Garden Show on this first weekend of August. It is the second of the eighth month, and it is continuing to be sunny and a bit on some of those days. And before we go on to our next caller, you want to just do a follow-up on something regarding that happened at the top of the show.
I was wrong. I know. Mark it on the calendar. I was wrong. It's rare. It's a very rare occasion. Margaret was calling about her boxwood, and she said she had some little sort of look like blueberries hanging on her boxwood. And I was like, oh, that's weird. But because I said I didn't think that boxwood actually produced berries, I was incorrect. Boxwoods do produce fruit, not like a berry, though. They're small, chambered capsules, they're called. They're green, little green when immature. They turn brown when mature. They're not showy. They're pretty inconspicuous. So, yes, indeed, you will get the odd little capsule, it must be just kind of blackened on her boxwoods, but they typically go from green to brown.
Okay.
There you go.
I have to, sorry for the delay. I just got my calendar out. I was just marking that down as you said.
Okay. So. Yeah.
You know what? How many like millions of plants are there out there, Charlie? Oh, and, you know, mm-hmm. You can't possibly, you know, be an expert on everything, you know? And so you have a vast general knowledge on a lot of things. I mean, I've been with you now for, you know, nearing 4 years and you never cease to impress how you can just, you know, chat about these things. So.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like I always say, like, I know an awful lot. I just don't know everything. No. So, you know, every now and then I have to look something up or you know, there's things I haven't grown, I don't have experience with. But I do try to learn. I'm always learning. That's what's so great about the show, too, is I get questions that force me to learn. And teaching when I was teaching at both Humber College and Durham College, again, just excellent. Because you do get asked questions, you have to, you know, it challenges you, which is very good for the brain.
Well, I have learned much since I've started co-hosting the show with you, and I enjoy it a lot. We're going to go to our next caller, Barbara from Burlington. Welcome to The Garden Show, Barbara.
Hello, Charlie, Andy.
Morning.
Hi, Charlie, there. A great compliment to you. You've forgotten more than I've ever learned. So, yeah. Yeah. Now, hopefully my mother is listening because this is about her burning bush. She had a burning bush in her backyard, probably 4 years old, about 9 feet tall, trimmed heavily from the bottom so that it was leaf-filled at the top, but trunky at the bottom. This summer, it went from beautiful little green leaves to dead yellow in about 3 days.
And what's it doing now? Is it, are there no leaves on it?
There's no leaves. It looks like it's dead. I'm assuming that something got into the trunk and did something terrible, but I don't know. So my question is, any idea if it'll come back next year?
Okay. So I'm trying to think, like, burning bush is not, is usually not really susceptible to anything that would kill it except rabbits. Rabbits love the bark of burning bushes. So, but it happened in the summer and it leafed out in the spring. And did you, and was there any evidence of bark damage in the spring?
No. And it was growing. It was growing this summer. And it kind of just died over 3 days.
Wow. Well, the one thing you could do now is you can go out with your, you know, or your mom could go out, scrape a little bit of just the superficial bark along one of the branches, not the main stem, but one of the branches, if she can reach up there, and just give a little scrape. See if there's any green, any moisture, any flexibility to these smaller stems and branches. If it's all very dry and wrinkly, that would be dead wood. And then the question is whether there's live wood. And then the other question is, what happened? Like, why did it leaf out and then suddenly collapse? Taking a good look at the stem, there might be like some kind of borer that could have gotten in there, but still borers don't kill that fast. They kill, but not that fast. So something, I have to think about this, see if there's any, anything comes to mind. But yeah, for now, it's an inspect the tree. Inspect with both the thumbnail, but also on the hands and knees, look around the base. You know, when an insect bores into a tree or a shrub, it will leave behind sawdust. You will see little bits of, because it, you know, boring in, it's like, you know, a little drill going in, it sawdust comes out the hole. So look for that kind of thing when you suspect something like that. And there was nothing obvious, no like flood or toxic chemical or anything like that anywhere near the plant, then you're right. I probably suspect, but I'll look up a bit more, see if I can come up with any better ideas. But for now, it might come back in the spring. It might not. It just depends whether it's alive now or not.
Okay. Incidentally, if you have an issue that might be better described with a photograph, hard to describe, you can always snap a picture and you can send it to Charlie's email, which is c.dobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. Okay, we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on The Garden Show. Quick question, Charlie. All my daisies that are done, can I clip them all off? Can I deadhead them now?
Absolutely. Are they like traditional white daisies with a yellow center?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. So you'll follow that stem all the way down. You'll be cutting it off at ground level.
At ground level. Okay.
Yeah. And great. New daisies will grow.
Super. Okay.
Okay.
Excellent. I'm going to do that. We're going to go now for our next caller to the western part of our province, right near the shores of Lake Huron. We've got Marilyn from Seaforth, Ontario. Yeah. Welcome to The Garden Show, Marilyn.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about my peonies. Is it okay to cut them off now?
Or oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. Once your peonies are finished blooming, you will have these huge, what's left behind are huge seed heads. And I absolutely cut those off as soon as I see them. As soon as the petals have fallen, I remove the spent, what's left behind, because it just drains off energy from the plant. You're not going to start a nursery. You're not going to grow those seeds. So just cut, like, follow the leaves back, a couple of leaves back, so that you're where you remove and cut away the past flower or spent flower is hidden. So it becomes just a nice green shrub.
Okay. Okay. I've already done that, but can I cut them down to the ground now?
No. There's no reason to cut them down to the ground. Wait until we have a hard frost. So that'll be October, November. We have a hard frost. The leaves will turn brown. The plant will obviously have, you know, gone dormant at that point. Then you cut them off at ground level, not before.
Okay, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Jean, who's calling from Newmarket. Welcome to the Garden Show, Jean. Hey there, Jean. What do you got?
Morning. Jean, are you there?
Oh, we'll go to our next caller then. We got Pat on the line. Pat from Cambridge. Welcome to the Garden Show, Pat.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm having the same problem with the burning bush as your previous caller. All the leaves are coming off it, and this is 2 years in a row that it did it. I thought it was dead last year, but it came back. And now I'm getting the same problem. All the leaves are falling right off it.
And they're turning yellow before they fall off.
Not really. Like opaque, kind of grayish.
Oh.
And it's pretty well bare right now. This has been going on for maybe over a week. And it did the exact same thing last year.
So if you went out now and you looked, what I would look for would, well, particularly if the leaves have turned grayish, they've gone from green like to a sort of a granular look on the leaves and pale, like a disappearing of the chlorophyll, basically. I would be looking for webbing in that plant. There are spider mites that suck the insides of many, many plants, of liquid. So you won't see the spider mites because they're tiny, but you will see the webbing. So I would go out when the sun is sort of behind the burning bush, if you can, see if you see any evidence of webs or any evidence of insect poop, also known as frass. It'll be quite tiny, be on the underside of the leaves. So look for any kind of unusual coloration, granular bits. Again, at the base of the plant, ground level, look for any kind of sawdust. Like, do a real inspection on the plant, and then, or consider if you would like to email me a photograph, Pat, of what the leaves look like right now. I might be able to be of more help. Burning bush shouldn't be a hard plant to grow, and yet both of you are having this issue. So I don't quite know why, and it'd be good to find out. It's a pretty tough plant. It's a very pretty plant. It's also now considered an invasive alien plant, and there's a lot of reasons why people are recommending we don't grow it, but nevertheless, it's a pretty plant. It's usually very easy to grow. So yeah, send me photographs if you don't mind, and we'll try and figure out what's going on.
And again, Charlie's email is c.dobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. Well, we have about 2 minutes left, Charlie. Let's do a quick chat about bulbs.
Yeah, really quick. I just want to remind you, Dean, and anybody else, we've been talking about garlic, obviously, which is a bulb. But, you know, next spring, we're going to be all juiced up when our tulips and daffodils emerge, and they're beautiful and fragrant. So let's remember, we're getting to that point of planting bulbs. Not yet, it's still August, but by September, we are planting bulbs for next spring beauty. I'm going to recommend a website, write this down, one word, flowerbulbsareus.com. So one word, flowerbulbsareus, like the R is like toys are us.
Like just the letter R.
Yeah, and that is the woman who runs that is a friend of mine. She imports from the Netherlands all the bulbs that she sells, and her quality is absolutely stupendous. Big bulbs, beautiful big flowers, because the bigger, the, you know, this is where size matters, right? Mm-hmm. So big bulbs, big flowers. And we're going to talk more about amaryllis, but she also supplies incredibly unusual amaryllis into the market. And they're monster bulbs. Like, they're not those little squidgy things you get in a box at Home Depot. They're massive things. So they're really, really nice to have. Anyway, that's just a reminder. And we'll talk more, I'm sure, about more bulbs in the future. Mm-hmm. But yeah, thank you. Thank you, Dean.
Thank you. Well, thanks for the reminder, you and the callers, that I have to dig up my garlic
right now.
Well, so I'm marching outside and going to do that, because I did. It got cut off the scapes a couple of weeks ago, a few weeks ago, but then I forget about it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why we have to go out and visit our gardens regularly, preferably with that glass of wine in hand or lemonade, depending on, you know, what you prefer, your drink preferences are. Thanks, Anthony. Did a great job. Couldn't have done any of this without you. And Dean, let's pray for rain and get that garlic up out of the ground.
Okay.
Curing, ready for yummy winter.
Right, how long do I have to hang it quickly?
Roughly 2 weeks, 3 weeks if you can.
Okay.
Bye-bye. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.